Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Yvonne Pierre Show. Hear from people who have overcome obstacles, have inspirational stories to tell, or helpful information to share.
Our child, and we were to take her home. Remarkable advice for that era when many children with Down syndrome were put in institutions.
I was living for today, not caring about tomorrow.
The Yvonne Pierre Show,
living off with
a variety talk show
and giving
whose only
all
mission
power to the
how are you?
That were only going to bring me to my knees. And I turned around and I remember this 48 years later of when I turned around and I said to her, no, I can do it. That kind of set the tone to her right from the beginning that even though I was in a chair, you know, I was still independent. I was still going to do things.
I believe that everything happens for a reason. We are vessels that have the option to allow God to use us.
Make a choice to break the generational curses on our life.
Thank you for tuning in. Now, here is your host, Yvonne Pierre.
Welcome, welcome, and thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode. As many of you may, as you may or may not know, I'm a proud mom of two sons. My youngest son has Down syndrome, and I've been advocating through various projects over the years to spread awareness since, and actually I've been doing that since 2005. There are many, many, many inspirational stories and people that I've come across over the years that have really, really touched and inspired my life. And then there's those stories that also touch my life that are absolutely devastating. You might have heard of the case with Mr. Powell, a young man, 22-year-old young man with Down syndrome, who was coming home from a park and saw the police. And the police spotted him, and they saw a bulge on his side, assuming it was a gun, and they stopped him. They were very aggressive, and even after they realized that it wasn't a gun, it was his colostomy bag, he was beaten by the police. His parents were screaming and trying to inform the police that he had Down syndrome, and their response was very rude and negative. Or you might have also heard of the case of the family of the Vanderhurst family, where their 16-year-old son, who also had Down syndrome, wasn't able to board and fly on American Airlines because the pilot saw him as a flight risk, flight and a security risk. So today, my guest, Leroy Moore Jr., is joining me to have this conversation about discrimination and profiling against individuals with disabilities. Leroy Moore is, and just to give you a little background about him, Leroy Moore is a black writer, poet, hip-hop music lover, feminist, and community activist with cerebral palsy. He has been sharing his perspective on identity, race, and disability over 13 years. His work began in London, England, where he discovered the Black Disabled Movement, which led to the creation of his literature series. Leroy is co-founder, community relations director, and contributing writer and performer for Sins Invalid Performance Project. He is also the creator of Crip Hop Nation, and I love that the title of Crip Hop Nation, and he produced Crip Hop Mixtape Series. Leroy formed one of the first organizations for black people, for people of color with disabilities in the San Francisco Bay Area, and is associated with the National Black Disability Coalition. He was previously a co-host of a radio show in San Francisco and Berkeley, Since 1992, Leroy was has written for the San Francisco Bayview newspaper. Leroy is one of the leading voices around police brutality and wrongful incarceration of people with disabilities. He has studied, worked, and lectured in the field of race, disability, concerning blues, hip-hop, and social justice issues nationally and internationally. Leroy is currently writing a crip-hop book with Professor Terry Roden. And I would like to welcome Leroy to the show. Welcome, Leroy.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. As a parent, you know, not all parents or not all people get into being advocates, or even though they're passionate about or they feel a certain way, I'll say, just saying as a parent, you know, I've come across a lot of parents that care and stuff, but they don't know how to get involved, or they don't want to get involved. But for you, you've been very, very involved in the disabled community, and so my first question is, what moved you to become a voice in the disabled community?
Well, I think what moved me was just seeing discrimination. Just seeing discrimination and racism in my black disabled community. And, you know, growing up, I was the only black person with a disability in a lot of disabled organizations. So, you know, seeing that and always questioning authority, even when I was a kid, that really made me want to push it even further in my advocacy and arts arena. Of course, my parents, pushed me into disability services and programs and really, you know, taught me about advocacy skills. But really, just the personal experience of being a person with a disability and being black and being proud to be those two things and not seeing myself in societal mirrors in the 70s and 80s.
Wow. Wow. And you often use the term disability profiling. Could you share with us what is disability profiling?
Yeah, it's like racially profiling. You know, it's really assumptions and backwards attitudes toward people with disabilities that have been with us since day one. You know, from thinking that we are useless, need to be cured, to be out of sight, out of mind. Disabled profiling many times is mixed with race and class. We are seen as criminal, you know, not continue to anything gross to look at, always needing help. In cases of disabled profiling, it comes down by people in authority roles like police, security guards, teachers, sometimes service providers, and the list goes on. Without a word from the person with a disability. Matter of fact, the stop and frisk policy in New York, the first lawsuit was brought by a black blind man that was standing on the corner just minding his business, and he got, you know, stopped and frisked. So, you know, that's disabled profiling. And me and Keith Jones, a friend of mine who's also has CP and black and is a disability advocate, we did a song called Disabled Profiling just to, you know, make it aware to people that it's happening.
Yeah. Yeah, and being a mom, of course, I've seen it a lot, and it's been in the news. One of the cases I remember is the guy in the theater when he, the security guard, was very aggressive toward him, and he ended up suffocating.
Yeah.
So we've seen a lot of, and maybe it's, I'm more conscious of it, or I'm not sure why, if it's an epidemic or if I'm just more conscious of it. So is it that you feel like it's a growing epidemic, or do you feel like it's just now starting to be more exposed?
Yeah, I feel like it's now being, you know, publicized by us. You know, that's a really key point by people with disabilities. In our own words, yes, it is in the media a lot, but mainstream media never had what my good friend and activist Patty Byrne created on disability justice framework. So because of that, you know, it's really on us to bring it out in the beginning, then of course mainstream media picks it up. Susan Swite wrote a book called The Ugly Laws, when many states had laws on the books that people with disabilities need to stay hidden. So I think it was like back in the 20s or 30s, and if people with disabilities were outside, you know, they were, you know, ticketed and, you know, forced to be inside. So that right there is on the early days of disabled profiling, and that's the early form of profiling. Now today with gentrification comes with sweeping laws that create poor people and people with disabilities and people of color. So disabled profiling has a long history, although the term might be new to the general public.
Yeah. Yeah, and I really think, thank goodness, thank God for social media and technology now, because I think that's another contribution to, because you have people like us and parents and stuff spreading the information once we come across it, because it's not being, I feel like it's not being dealt with or taken as seriously as it needs to be, you know, as other cases that I see where it's wrong and it's devastating, it's not taken in the same context as someone with a disability, which as a parent I find that, you know, very, very disturbing. So I'm glad and thank God for people like you and that are very vocal in getting the message out. And as a parent also, I've seen discrimination, of course, towards the disabled. I've even seen discrimination against my son, and it's mind-blowing. What has been your personal, and you've already kind of touched on it, but if you can elaborate on your personal experience in regards to discrimination.
Yeah, it's personal experience. It's so funny because a lot of, in the media, you know, we take our news and our subject from the media, and a lot of media only focus on individual discrimination, but don't really focus on institutional discrimination. And that's where a lot of people of color with disabilities, a lot of queer people with disabilities, a lot of poor people with disabilities, experience discrimination in, you know, and but, you know, that's less in the media, you know. My personal experience, it's like I think most black men with disabilities, you know, being profiled by the police constantly, you know, being looked at when I try to catch a taxi. Okay, now that happened a couple of days ago, I was in the rain, couldn't catch a taxi, you know, being black and disabled, you know. But, you know, the institutionalized, from nursing homes to prisons to schools, we see a lot of discrimination toward people with disabilities, you know, especially in, like, group homes and institutions. And I think that's where our work should continue. You know, of course, we have individual stories, but we spend most of our time, most of our days in institutions, from schools to work.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. You wrote, as I said in the introduction, you are a poet, and you wrote a song called Like You. And it's a piece that you wrote and recorded. But before I play it, could you tell us a little bit about it and what moved you to write it?
Yeah, I think what moved me to write it, you know, just speaking back to my black community, you know, growing up, like I said, you know, being the only black disabled person in most of my places, I wanted to speak back to my community and speak and say what's going on. And I think that was, you know, the experience around the poem Like You. And you know, other activists have done in the past, black gay activists like XX Hensfield, you know, wrote so much about racism and homophobia in the black community. So it's not, you know, it's not the first and it won't be the last. But I think black people with disabilities really need to speak up about the ableism in the black community, because it's there so much. And I think that's one of the disconnecting bridges that make us not come together, is ableism in the black community, and not knowing that black disabled people has a history, has a culture, has art, and has a lot to offer the black community.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to play the song, and I want to touch back on that after we come back, after we listen to the song. But here's Like You by Leroy Moore.
This poem is dedicated to the black community. It's called Like You. I'm black like you, so why do you stare at me? We have the same features, big lips, flat nose, dark brown skin, and nappy hair. How come you won't speak to me? Are you embarrassed by my physical appearance? Do I scare you? For years, I've sat next to you on the way to work, and you bury your head in your newspaper. I've noticed you looking at me as I get off the bus. I'm black like you, but you don't know my history, the disability rights movement. We have so much in common, but we are strangers to each other. We both experience discrimination in jobs, housing, and education. But you will get to the promised land by stepping on me. Although we attend the same school and church, I feel like a stranger in town. How funny! I like green, black-eyed peas, watermelon, and fried chicken like you. You call your friends brothers and sisters, but you disown me. You complain you don't have anything, but you have your own businesses, colleges, magazines, radio, and television stations. I'm black like you, but we live in two different worlds. I take a step towards you, but you take two steps backwards. I'm almost at the end of my rope, but when I look in the mirror, I see you. Yes, I have a disability, but I'm still black like you. Think about it. The black community.
That was Leroy Moore, Like You, spoken word piece. And one of the things, I love it, Leroy, and in that song, in that spoken word piece, the thing that stands out the most to me is how there's division within the, not just in the I've seen personally a lot of division within the special needs community, and also division within the black community. There's a lot of divisions. And I'm glad that you did this song to awaken something in black people that may not even realize that they're doing it. And to bring more awareness of the fact that we need to come together regardless of disabilities or abilities, because we all have things that we're challenged with. So I'm glad that touched on that, and I think a lot of people are afraid to touch on that because they, for whatever reason, people are afraid to touch on the stigma that's in the black community when it comes to the disabled. And I've seen it firsthand myself, being a parent of a child with a disability. I've seen seen what you're talking about in this spoken word piece. So again, thank you for blessing us with that.
Yeah, thank you for playing it. It's a very old piece. You wrote that in the 80s.
Yeah. Overall, Leroy, what do you want to see change?
Well, you know, we got laws, services, and such. Although, as we black and people of color with disabilities all know that many times these services and laws don't reach our community. But there have been work on that. I want to see more cultural acceptance of people of color with disabilities in arts, music, books, plays by people of color with disabilities, like Sins and Valid, Queer Pop Nation, and other institutions. I think that's when you will see behaviors change. I see it in my work in Queer Pop and Sins and Valid. You know, people come to see our work and their attitude totally changes. You know, so more recognition of the culture, the arts, the history, the advocacy of black and people of color with disabilities, you know, and getting disability out of only seeing it as a service kind of model, or seeing
right.
it only as, you know, receiving benefits, but really getting into the culture, the arts, the history, and seeing that people with disabilities have been here since Moses. And so because of that, we have a history, we have an art, we have music that needs to be recognized it needs to be shared in schools, outside of schools, in people's homes, you know, on the big screen, in the streets. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I absolutely agree. 100%. That's been one of the things that I've noticed as well in my advocacy, that when I was working on a documentary a while back, I'm like, well, where did the stigma come from? Where did this attitude toward the disabled come from? If we've all been here the same amount of time, when did they become, you know, the outcasts of society? And that really started disturbing me, because I started looking and I'm like, where's the history? You know?
Yeah.
So I'm glad, again, that we have advocates and activists within the disabled community, such as yourself, that are noticing these things, these flaws that we've made, as far as not including it in the history books, not educating people on different disabilities. And I think also a lot of the stigma come from the disabled community being grouped as one. You know, yeah. Even though there's certain things that we're all fighting for, but giving people a full understanding and a full scope of what these different what it is, you know, and to try to eliminate some of the ignorance and the fear. And I think I agree with what you said, that the more people are exposed, the more they will become, you know, not afraid of, or they feel more empowered, and not just the public, but also a lot of people that have different disabilities will become more courageous in their walk, seeing, you know, something, seeing a movie or seeing, you know, some type of piece that they can relate to. Just like being black, seeing more black people in films and stuff have gave us a sense of courage and hope as a black community, and I would love to see that as well in the special needs in the disabled community.
You know, it's so funny, because I was talking to this black playwright, and he was doing a play about Harriet Tubman, and I asked him, oh, are you going to cover her disability? And he's like, oh, I didn't know, and I just don't have time to include that in. And it just shocked me. I was like, you don't have time to include one of her identities that really made the Underground Railroad go, you know?
Right.
Because she used her disability just to help other people the freedom. So, it's shocking how much our history is being left out.
Yeah. And I was talking to somebody a while back about, you know, a lot of, you know, because in Hollywood they use a lot of actors that act like they have a disability, but they don't have, in real life, they don't have that disability. And my thing is, there are a lot of actors, a lot of talented actors with those disabilities that they can use in the film. And I think that, like you said, I think that their perception of including the disabled in their films, they feel like it may be more work. They feel like it may, but they have people that will be there with them, depending on what their disability is and what their challenges are, you know. But, you know, I just think it's unfortunate. But I think that I'm starting to see more and more people in films that, and I'll just say with Down syndrome, for example, I'm starting to see more and more actors with Down syndrome being placed in TV shows like Glee and different movies different things.
Yeah, it's still lacking people of color, though. I see.
Yeah.
I'm just going to tell you, I see a lot of white disabled people getting roles, but I don't see, I see a few black and people of color getting roles. So
yeah.
That's really an eye-opener, kind of, you know, thing to always recognize, you know.
Yeah. And I want to say too, I was working on a film project years ago, and it was a casting call for casting calls. Working with Chris Gray Casting, and we were doing a casting call for the movie What to Expect When You're Expecting, and they were looking for babies, and on my Facebook and stuff, and I was really blown away that no one. With no kids, no parents brought their kids with, because it didn't say that they were excluded, but the parents did not come to bring their kids that had special needs. And I wonder if they just feel like they can't, or, you know, it wasn't a case where they only picked kids that weren't disabled. The kids with disabilities, the parents didn't bring them. So, you know, so I think as well as they need to look more for putting roles for not just special needs, but not just for disabilities, but for kids in the black community that are disabled, regardless of color, let me just say that, regardless of color and race, we need to start coming out in droves to put our kids in these films. I think
that will happen when, because it starts at home.
Yeah.
If the parents don't have the black or people of color disabled history and culture, then they fall back to the medical model of disability, you know, or to, you know, isolate their kid because they don't have that education, you know. So and you know, we can't always rely on the schools, because when I was in school, I never learned about black disabled people. I learned it when I was out of school and I did my own research.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's unfortunate. I think there's a lot of different, not just with institutions and also within parents, we have to change the way we deal with or see, you know, there's a lot of parents that struggle with having a child with special needs, and that's one of the reasons why I do a lot of advocacy. And the play that I did, Then You Stand, was geared toward parents that kind of, like you said, they isolate their children, and because they have a lack of understanding as well. And that's something that a lot of parents or a lot of people kind of shy away from talking about, but it's something that needs to be talked more about. And we can't help our children if we are, and I'm just speaking as a parent, I can't help Zion if I'm ashamed of him or if I have a lack of hope for him and I figure, you know, he's not going to, if I put limitations on him, I'm not going to get him the help that he need to get him to the level that he so deserved to be, you know, to be. So like you said, it does start at home. So where and how do we begin to change it? The whole thing on discrimination and disabled profiling.
Well, I think we change it on two levels. On one is organizing, and two for me is cultural expression and education. You know, we love to have. I would love to have like a summer institute for youth and young adults with disabilities of color to teach and share, you know, cultural expressions, history, and build self-empowerment and organizing skills.
Yeah.
You know, there's, I don't think there's not one program that I know of, I could be wrong, for youth and young adults of color. That's it, you know. There's lots of programs for disabled youth, but I'm thinking that disabled youth of color have an extra experience of racism. So they need to be with their brothers and sisters, listening, you know, learning and, you know, expressing themselves in a, an environment that they could do that, you know.
Yeah.
You know, from there to continue the work that is being done now, like the building of disability justice from Simpson Valley, Teddy Byrne, the international music history work of Hip Hop Nation, organizing with the, you know, the Black Disabled Studies that the National Black Disabled Coalition is doing. There's work from Asian Pacific Islanders with Disabilities of California. You know, this is your work. You know, you saved me, you know, doing that play. You know, there's so much stuff out there. And, you know, there's Ideal Magazine that's run by a Black disabled journalist. You know, there's films like Not Home with Nashara Reedus. You know, so there's so much out there. It'd be wonderful if somehow we could, you know, all come together with this institute or conference. And I'm not saying that a conference could, you know, to erase the history of ableism, but I think it could start a new way of thinking.
Yeah.
Especially with people of color with disabilities. You know, there's very few people of color organizations for people with disabilities. And
yeah.
That's another thing. You know, Martin Luther King used to say, you know, I can't go your way if you're not going my way.
Yeah, I think that's a it is a good way to start and to bring more awareness to also, you know, start the conversation and, like you said, and really touch on the different things that that will spiral and make a change, because the people that's there may be moved to do something, you know. So I think that is a great start to also, you know, for the discussion, you know, and to educate people on, you know, a lot of the issues that need to be resolved.
It's hard work. You know, it's not like, you know, it's gonna happen overnight. It's not like you're gonna get a federal grant to do everything. You know, it's very hard work. You know.
Yeah, but it's gonna take, like you said, the advocates and the activists within the community from different areas like cerebral palsy, Down syndrome, autism. It's going to take all of us to come together to really make a big impact. And like we said earlier, even within the special needs or the disabled community, there's division. So, I mean, we really have a lot of inner work to do within the disabled community, but I think that there's hope. I think that things can change and it can be done.
Yeah, and also I think it's going to take, you know, artists, journalists, it's going to take, you know, people that have their own skills to to include or to have them, you know, do their skills in their arena around, you know, disability, you know, race and disability, you know.
Yeah. Wow. Before we go, Leroy, what projects are you working on now that you'd like to share?
Yeah, I'm writing a book around disability and hip-hop that's been taking up a lot of my time. Also, Nairu, a friend of mine, is doing a film documentary on the late Joe Capers. Joe Capers was a music engineer that had the first accessible studio in Oakland and worked with MC Hammer, En Vogue, and all those people. Also, me and Emmett Thrower of New York is doing a documentary on police brutality against people with disabilities. Now, on the Quip Hop Nation side, April, we're hosting a hip-hop portion of Untangle Festival in Toronto, Canada.
Wow.
And so we're going to have performance workshops and a film night with Counter Clockwise. They're a husband and wife team from Ohio, and the husband is a wheelchair user. And in November, Crip Hop is going to Data Fest in Liverpool, UK. So we're doing a little tour around the UK. And a couple people from Crip Hop is going there. And our really big, big project that it's going to take years to do, but we want to have an African Crip Hop tour. And we would love to have Stevie Wonder involved with that tour and conference, bringing a lot of Africans with disabilities, African musicians with disabilities, artists, to meet African Americans with disabilities. And
yeah.
have a little networking conference in Africa.
Yeah. Wow. How can people, you're going to be very busy. How can people,
yeah.
How can people find out more information and connect with you? Do you have a website that have all this information on it? Where can we direct the listeners to?
See, the website is being worked on now, which I'm totally excited about. It's going to be our first Crip Hop website. So that's being worked on now. For now, you can just drop me a line on Crip with a K, CripHopNation@gmail.com. You can also go to Facebook. I'm always on, Leroy Moore on Crip Hop Nation. You can also, if you're interested in Sins and Ballot, matter of fact, we just put out our film documentary, so we're looking to go to universities and film festivals. You can go to sinsandballot.org and get more information.
Wow. Well, I want to thank you, Leroy, for joining us. I want to thank you for all that you're doing to make a difference, and I want to thank you for using your voice, and I commend you for all that you're doing, and I wish you nothing but the best in your journey, and again, thank you for being on the show.
Well, thank you so much, and you keep up your work, too. I love that play, and I hope you keep doing work around disability and the arts.
Yeah, I will continue. I'm dedicated to it, and I can't stop until I see some change. So, and I know the same is for you. So again, have a wonderful day, and thank you so much again for joining us.
Thank you, and take care.
You too.
I was meant to fly.
Oh, no matter who pushes me, I know I'm not gonna let you. I'm not gonna let you get me down. No, no, no.
Thank you so much for tuning in today. It has been an absolute pleasure, and I thank you for choosing this time to spend with me, your host, Yvonne Pierre. For more information about the show, how to be a guest, or to simply let me know what you think about today's show or previous shows, visit me at ypierre.com. That's www.ypierre.com. Remember to keep God first, know that you are blessed, and always stay true to yourself. I love you, God loves you, and thank you for listening.